And we are here once again. Thank you for joining us. I know, don't you love that music?
I love that music. Totally. Thank you for waking me up at 2 in the morning.
No problem. No problem. We are two cantors that have walked into this bar. We are happy to be with you. I am cantor Matt Axelrod from Scotch Plains, New Jersey, and I am here with the, I did not come prepared with an adjective. So describe yourself and who are you?
Oh my God. Oh, here you go. No pressure. Describe yourself. I am Cantor Penny Myers of Temple Beth Zion in balmy Buffalo, New York.
We need an adjective. We've used effervescent.
Immutable. No, wait. That's a communicable.
Inimitable.
I can't say that.
Means you can't change.
I need more.
Okay. Well, whoever you are.
Funny you should say whoever I am.
Why?
Because...
Well, we'll get to that in a second.
All right.
You know, this is... We have to ease into our topic. So, actually, Penny, you have some very exciting news to share with us from the past week. You received an honor that, well, really... all of us mere mortals can only dream of.
Oh, yes. Yes, I got the Super Bowl ring.
Okay, would you care to describe this incredible honor that has been bestowed upon you?
Yes, I was inducted into my high school's Wall of Fame or Wall of Honor. Talk about feeling completely... not worthy.
Wait, so which high school?
Williamsville North High School. I can't even talk. Williamsville North High School. It's part of the Williamsville Central School District, and somebody nominated me based on philanthropy that my husband and I give, the work that I do to the community.
You can't see right now, but Penny is motioning me to be quiet because she can just see.
I can just see he's ready to jump in, but he's not going to. Yes, no. So I was inducted to the detriment and horror of two of my children who are in that high school, and now my mugshot.
I didn't realize that.
They get to pass my face every single day.
That's horrible.
It was a beautiful ceremony. I was embarrassed.
What do you do if you're a high school kid and your mother is...
And I have like my own section, like because they, you know, well, the way because, that they've
well,
done
what
it.
I'm picturing is that you're like basically one of two people on the wall. You probably have your own wing of the building.
Stop it.
I mean,
no.
What did the other inductee, you know, there, over the years...
The other one... Well, first of all, there's three high schools in the district.
Is he the guy that invented like the little plastic thing that sit on the end of shoelaces so they fit through the holes better?
No, I don't think that guy went to North, but you know who? Isn't it? Christine Baranski. She's an actress. She went to my high school. But you know what? The other inductees from my high school, one guy was a CIA agent and worked for at Langley. And he could not at all. We were supposed to give a 10-minute speech to the student body. So
really?
Not only
that's a long time to speak.
It's a long
did
time
you
to
do
speak.
It?
Yes, and I did it twice because the school, high school is so big, so there's two assemblies. But the CIA agent, was supposed to talk about his work and what got him there. And
he can't talk about his work.
He couldn't talk at all. He's like, I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you. And then he realized that did not go over well in high school.
He really said that?
Yes.
He did not.
Yes, he did. I actually said I was addicted to music like crack.
This is like a bad Monty Python sketch.
The CIA agent says, I would tell you about my work, but then I'd have to kill you. In the high school. Meanwhile, he followed me after I had just said to the high school...
Ladies and gentlemen, we're canceling our topic today. This is all we're talking about for the next 20 minutes.
Well, apparently, because I said I was hooked on music, I was so addicted, it was like crack. Well, apparently, the principal just kind of like stood up.
Well, which statement was more
true?
Offensive? The crack?
Oh, no,
or
no,
the
no.
I'll have to kill you statement?
No, no. But what gets even worse is that Corinne, my daughter, was in that session and she's started texting me.
When did she transfer to another school?
Oh, well, I know that she's like, I want to go to a private school. But then she said, Mom, all my friends think you do crack. I'm like, Corinne.
That's all they
heard. She's like, that's all they heard.
This is
the best thing.
I'm picturing, you know, career day, you know, and the CIA agent comes up
and, like,
and just stands silent for like 10
that's
minutes.
Right.
I can't tell
talking
you
about being alert, talking about when he was...
Is he even allowed to say I'm a CIA agent?
He did say he worked for CIA. Now, I don't know if he's an active agent.
Wait, maybe he works for the Culinary Institute of America and he's a chef.
No, this guy was not a chef. You could tell from his disposition. Oh, it was the coolest and like most like, oh my God, you have to tell me many things.
And he couldn't. He probably works like a desk job or something. You know, he probably files.
He couldn't say anything. And I was like, and there was another guy who's a superintendent. There was three inductees to my high school, three inductees to another high school, and actually four for the other high school in the district. And
I'm still chuckling over being on the wall of fame.
I got to tell you, it starts off with this 8 a.m. breakfast. And here I am, like, I'm a cantor, like, whatever. Like, all I do is I do my job, I minister to my community. And at 8 a.m., I have to go to this country club for this huge breakfast. I'm being honored.
Oh, it wasn't at the high school, it was at a country club.
Well, it started at the country club. With dignitaries and things, and I was like, so embarrassed.
This is like from The Music Man when the Wells Fargo wagon comes through town and everybody runs. I mean, that's the biggest source of excitement.
That's just what it is. It was in the papers. Nothing happens. It was in the Jewish paper. I'm embarrassed.
I'm embarrassed for you.
And so I get there, and I don't feel deserving. I really don't feel deserving of this award at all because I feel like, what have I done?
I agree. I don't think you did.
I haven't done anything. And for those who work with me, are like, she really doesn't do much.
I would have voted for the CIA agent.
I know. I'm like, who? You know, if he's a CIA agent, like, who's the operative who like nominated him? Like, what would you put for what they've done? You know, because there's a whole thing of.
I wonder how many people they asked who said no. And
I originally said no.
Okay.
This is a weird year of honors for me and my husband. Why? How do we get on this? So let me just tell you, I have to because this day it was a week ago, and I'm still kind of trying to figure it all out. You know, I'm used to being there to honor other people. We are used to be there. We are.
Wait, this is a good time to order our first round of drinks. We've been sitting here, and the bartenders came over.
I want you to know that I already started before you.
I can tell.
I know. I'm a little woo.
That much is obvious. I'm going to catch up, and they're here. So fantastic. Continue what we're going to say. I couldn't.
I totally forgot. Oh yeah. So as cantors, you know, we are used to being the ones. I mean, sure, we're in front of people. We're ministering to our congregation. We are singing or performing or davening, leading prayers, whatever. But the thing is that when we get honored, it is the most out of body, uncomfortable. I feel completely embarrassed.
I don't mind it.
Well, you haven't been inducted into your high school Hall of Fame. What have you done, Matt?
Not yet.
Not yet. Because you live in New Jersey.
Says the woman from Buffalo.
So at least they honor people. Anyway. So we get in. I get into. Bennett drops me off because Bennett's coming. My whole family, like my family's there, my parents, my father-in-law, like the like community leaders, community Jewish leaders that are there. And I walk into the country club at 8 a.m. And what do you think I did?
You ordered a mimosa.
No, there was no alcohol, unfortunately. I started to cry because I was so embarrassed. Because as soon as I walked in, people flocked to me. Mazel tov, congratulations, we're so proud, because this is only happening every couple of years. And I was so out of my element. I just started crying.
And they were like, what's wrong with this
exactly.
person?
Exactly. I said, I'm a little embarrassed. I'm overwhelmed. I don't feel like I deserve, like I'm.
So how long did the ceremony last at the country club? And then so you guys all had to go to the high school?
Yeah, we all went to our respective high schools. So it was several hours, and we had to, and I didn't know we had to when got our. It's a big deal,
a major deal.
I know, that's why I'm like still kind of like shaken about it because I don't feel deserving. I was one of the youngest.
So this leads us perfect.
That's right.
I mean, thank you so much.
There you go.
You just tee it up, and I just hit it out.
I know.
So we do have a topic. We are talking all about how once in a while we feel like we're imposters, like we are just. Not worthy, we don't know what we're doing, you know, and there's a name for it. It's called imposter syndrome, and it's not just in our field. It's in a lot of fields. A lot of professionals feel like they don't belong or they're not worthy, and what you were describing is exactly that. It's exactly perfect, where you're getting this honor, and you're like, why am I getting this honor? I don't deserve it.
Right.
I don't belong here.
That's exactly right. To my husband's detriment, Bennett was yelling at me. He's like, you do deserve it, darn it. You know, and I couldn't embrace it in the way that everybody else was.
Do you think that imposter syndrome is more common? Do you think it's a gender thing? Do you think women are socialized to think that they're not as deserving? Because I suffer from imposter syndrome
as
well. Yes.
All the time?
No, not all the time. And it was something that was, you know, obviously earlier in my career as I was in positions. In certain situations that I had experienced for the first few times, thinking, you know, what am I doing? Why am I looked on as the expert?
Right.
If I'm officiating at a funeral and people are looking to me for guidance and for comfort and for the right words, and why do you think I have the right words? You know, all the more so if I'm young and haven't even experienced sort of the breadth of world experience, and they're looking to me, and in a way I had to play the part.
Well, yeah, I think that you're absolutely right, because I think it has to do with gender. I think women have been conditioned, and girls were conditioned, to demur from compliments and to play it down.
Yes.
And to receive, you know, when receiving a compliment, to not just say not be as gracious, not rise that level of graciousness and just say thank you, but to be like thank you, you know, nice dress.
Thank you, but.
Right. And I'm finding more and more in my years of my life that I'm getting longer in my teeth, including the fillings.
Long in the tooth.
Long in the toothy tooth that just hit the glass of my old fashioned.
Hey,
you know, I'm finding that I'm being much more conscious of just when someone gives me a compliment.
To just say thank you.
Just say thank you. It is hard. And I think it's a gender thing. And I also think it's an age thing.
In which way? That you're when you're younger, it's harder to do it?
I think when you're younger, it's harder to do it because, you know, being short in the tooth, like literally when you don't have enough time. I love it.
We have to retire that metaphor.
We are never retiring that metaphor as I look at Matt's canines. No, I have it quite often. I have the imposter syndrome or not feeling worthy. You know, there was in our Jewish journal, which is the Buffalo, like, Jewish rag, right? That's what I call
you,
the Jewish
rag. You said
it, not me. No, it's actually awesome. The Jewish Federation puts it out, and it's really informative, and they do an excellent job of just capturing the essence of the Jewish community here in Buffalo, all strides of Judaism. And a few months ago, they did pages on students and kids, and there was one kid, he was a bar mitzvah student of mine, one that I don't feel like I invested as much energy into. He's an excellent musician. Apparently, he's now a professional musician, just released his first album or second album. I don't know, well, some album.
He's going to end up on the Wall of Fame in his high school.
No, it's all blues.
They're going to take your picture off and put his up.
That's fair.
Okay.
But the entire article, he mentioned me so many times about the influence that I had on him, and I didn't feel that was worthy because I didn't spend.
I didn't see the story going in that direction. That's very nice.
Yeah, like, you know, and Bennett says, my husband says, you plant these seeds, you hope that they grow, and look at that. A bar mitzvah student, you really, you know, it's not like this is someone who's been in my choir that I've nurtured, that we've watched and helped. You know, it was just a very isolated life cycle event, and the kid. He's not a kid anymore. You know, he came to shul for High Holy Days, wanted to talk with me, gave me a big hug, and just wants to get together for coffee because he wanted to talk about his connection to Judaism. And I felt like, who am I? And I think that's what makes us good at our jobs, is because we have that sense of humility.
There has to be a sense of humility. I think, I guess that comes with age and experience. I don't know, maybe it's a personality thing where, you know, people get the title, whether it's cantor, rabbi, doctor, you know, if they become a lawyer and they're working somewhere, I'm sure this transcends whatever professions, where people get out there and feel that, okay, they know everything there is to know, and they, or the opposite, maybe it's just a personality thing. I'm not sure, but.
Have you ever felt like worthy enough? And that sounds terrible, doesn't it?
I don't.
It's getting a little serious. Right. Well, I may need a shot at something.
I don't know if the adjective is worthy. I now feel qualified. I feel experienced in a way that I did not earlier on in my career, and felt that I really had to play the part, that I had to kind of put on this false sense of gravitas because I was the clergy. But, you know, I was just Matt in my 20s or 30s, and what am I doing here? And you know, often it had to do not so much with leading services, but, you know, officiating a funeral. I'm doing a wedding, you know, which is also a very joyous but serious event.
Sure.
Or doing civic activities.
Right. And like the voice of the Jewish people.
Because it's very
literally
interesting.
And figuratively.
It's very interesting. I don't know if you've experienced this, but non-Jews look at us in our profession with this reverence that Jews just don't. I mean, you know, they respect. They think clergy. They describe it as, oh, did you have a calling to become a cantor?
I did, and I think that that's beautiful. Did you? I did not.
I wanted, you know,
way to be honest.
It's not that you know, somebody dropped me off at the doors at JTS and I was like, okay, bye-bye. I'll do this. But it wasn't, I wouldn't describe it as a calling. It was an informed career choice, but it wasn't, but.
So weird to hear the cantor as the informed, informed,
what you said? Informed, yeah. It was something I wanted to do and pursued it and
you know. You're very successful at it. You've been at your pulpit so long.
And you too.
But that does not diminish.
You're listening to two success stories in our profession, I would say, right? Yes. Just say.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's really hard. Yeah. As a woman, and as a, I'm not young anymore. I'm middle age now, 45. You know, but it's one of those things, you know, I remember a funny story. You know, my husband has a very quiet confidence. And so let me just share a little bit about something that he experienced that he told me. And he's confident in his abilities, but he's not arrogant. He's confident in what he does, but he really doesn't have ego. And I admire him because his bedside manner, when he helps patients with significant, terrible diseases, you know, it's very helpful and comforting. And so early in his career, I remember him coming home and telling me that he had this patient who he just diagnosed with ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease or multiple sclerosis. I can't remember which one. And the people said, "Doctor, this is what we have that we know, and we're strong. We're strong in our faith in God, and we have faith in you." And he said he left that feeling really unworthy, uncomfortable, and just the gravity of someone just saying, you know, here we are with this, you know, terminal illness, and we have our faith in God, and we have our faith in you, come what may.
Well, that's a big responsibility to bear.
I know, but the thing is that he in that moment, like, I could sense that sense of imposter, unworthy, like, who am I? Right. Like, you know, I'm just this, you know, person that just diagnosed them, like, their faith is, he felt, it was funny, he said, like, their faith is completely misled or something like that.
Well, at least they put God first.
Of course they put God first. G-D's my co-pilot.
Most doctors would be like, you know, wait, why'd you put God first?
I am the doctor. That's not my husband. You know, I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, I think the whole imposter syndrome also is how we introduce ourselves to people.
And we play ourselves, you know, sometimes we don't want to, maybe early on we felt uncomfortable introducing ourselves as Cantor.
I still pause, you know, when I say I'm Cantor Penny Myers.
Or that we're not entitled to the proper, you know, title and being addressed by our title. So instead of Cantor Axelrod, I might say, "Hi, I'm Matt," or even Cantor Matt.
Oh, you say Cantor Matt.
Right.
We talked about this in an earlier podcast.
It certainly depends on the situation, and also that very much dependent on gender, I think, you know, that
really?
That's a whole thing. But we talked about that another time. I was thinking about this whole imposter syndrome thing, and I think it's very interesting that our tradition, our liturgy, recognizes this. If you remember our the High Holiday services, we have a prayer called the Hineni.
Of course,
and
I remember.
It is the imposter syndrome writ large. It's the entire.
Totally.
It's that's all it is. Is to literally say, here I am, here I stand.
I'm not worthy, and they're not.
And I can't believe everyone is depending on me
to be that conduit.
And I'm a sinner, and I've
You're
done all these
sinner?
Things. Well, I'm
I don't like that word.
Okay.
I missed the mark.
It's what the word says.
Yeah, I know.
Say. Okay.
You are a sinner.
You're
a sinner if you don't pay for this round.
Right, and
that's just got real.
That's how it's going to be. Okay. When you weren't looking, I gave him your credit card.
Oh, appreciate that.
That's all right. So you're buying the next three
especially
rounds.
Because it's a debit card. There's no money left on it. Yay!
Bring the
drink. What happens when you have kids.
So back to imposter syndrome and back to the Hineni. And I think it's amazing that even our most seasoned colleagues and those that we would, you know, view with reverence have to say, "I'm not worthy. I don't feel like I can adequately bear the responsibility, this awesome responsibility."
It's an awesome, in the very essence, Nora, in the Hebrew word.
I wish that there were some daily shortened version of the Hineni that were part of our prayers.
What about B'Tselem Elokim?
in the, well, it,
maybe
that
in the
we're all,
Shachar.
I mean,
but we're all made in God's image, but the thing is that God is very daunting. And so for me, I find that very humbling.
But I find it, instead of making it, you know, God-centered and spiritual, I think the beauty of the Heenany is that it's just so human. It's the opposite. It's not saying, I believe in the awesomeness of God and so forth and so on. It's
I
saying,
believe children are
it's
the
saying,
future.
And
teach them well
and let them
lead
the
way.
It's to say, listen, I'm human and I have, you know, insecurities and I'm here and I don't know what I'm doing here. And what
do you feel that way too sometimes? Do you ever feel like in the middle of, I think like particularly in the middle of a funeral, I have like this split brain. Don't you dare laugh at that. Like I'm up there.
You have not much to spare.
Oh man. Oh,
all right.
Just got real.
Okay.
So, but I'll be up there. There could be hundreds and hundreds of people in the Kahal. I mean, even here we go. Last week, huge funeral. The family asks for me. When I say huge, Governor Cuomo of New York State declared all flags at half staff because this guy died.
Okay. That's a
Irving
huge
Eisenberg. He was a first responder for 9/11.
Okay.
And of blessed memory. And he died of the cancer that was multiple myeloma, whatever it was. And so Governor Cuomo.
So he was from Buffalo, obviously.
Yes. And he was a fire chief and a retired fire chief and a paramedic. And in my congregation, Sanctuary holds 1,000 seats. And there was just about 700 people there. And there were fire trucks. And I was up there. Here I am. Who am I?
I totally get it.
Why did the family ask for me and not the rabbi? And it was just me to officiate. And I felt completely unworthy.
So you officiated by yourself.
Oh, yeah. Do you do that? I solely officiate funerals all the time.
I officiate funerals all
the time.
So the family
said, we want Cantor Penny.
But usually it's situational. It's, you know, it's not that the congregation can pick and choose who they want to officiate.
We do that.
Okay.
So it was just me.
Wow. So that
that's my shul. I mean, that's the dynamic.
And I can see how
it wasn't me just coming up to sing the 23rd Psalm or Essa Enai or the 121st Psalm or.
And did you feel like you were going through the motions, like you were playing the part of the somber clergy person, and you're thinking to yourself,
it was live stream,
and like you have this inner dialogue going in your head saying, what am I doing here? And I just, you know,
I was
don't swear on the Bima. did these people realize I'm just Penny?
Well, yeah, I mean, all the time.
Yeah.
It's in my shul, in my community, it's that kind of dynamic, especially that there's no hierarchy. So families can say, we want Kenner Myers to
Yeah, but
do
even
it.
If there were, I mean, regardless,
it was like a
you're
state
still.
Funeral.
Yeah, I mean, regardless, you're still, whether you would be officiating, co-officiating, whatever the situation, you're up there. You're the representative at this. What,
and the rabbi had been there.
Perfect description of a state funeral, basically.
It was a state funeral.
Right.
I mean, it was live streamed. Tons of eulogies, and I really believe this guy was a Lamed Vavnik, just based on his story. And I know we're getting off topic here, like one of the Hidden 36, because of the stories that were coming out that nobody knew, of lives that he saved and lives that he changed. And I felt completely overwhelmed, and I felt completely, even though I'm completely skilled and prepared and professional, believe it or not.
I believe it.
I still felt ill-prepared for a state funeral of this magnitude. I mean, it was another situation I had several years ago when Stan Lipsey, the former editor, and Warren Buffett's BFF.
You're just name-dropping all of them.
No, but this is the reality. And, you know, doing that funeral, and here is one of the Yagoogalizers, is what I say, eulogizers.
Oh.
Senator Schumer comes to give a eulogy.
Apparently, I'm living a very boring life in New Jersey. I don't get any of these
that's
things.
That's why it's New Jersey. You got to go to Buffalo. Buffalo's where it's at.
I got to say, I might have to change my tune.
Change your tune.
Make a pilgrimage to Buffalo.
You're missing out.
Maybe.
You're missing out. But, I mean, it's those senses of, especially when there's other rabbis and other clergy in the congregation. Oh,
totally.
My God.
It's like all these serious people. And the first
female cantor is a member of my
and
congregation.
And sometimes I have to pretend that I'm as, or feel like I'm pretending, that I'm as knowledgeable as all of these people.
Oh, yeah.
And if someone asks, you know, a question about that, you know, I'm supposed to know. And the fact is, I do know all this, right? But
that's my fear. Someone's going to ask me something I don't know.
Right. That everyone is, you know, they're scholars and they're rabbi and clergy and whoever, even among our colleagues in the cantorate.
Oh my gosh.
I feel that they're people who are just experts in the history of Jewish music and
Hazanut and professors.
And people are going to ask me a question and I'm not going to know it. And what am I doing here? Just I'm Matt and I sing nicely and I get along with people.
You davened mincha yesterday very well. I was so impressed. Could you have picked the longer service?
I'm sorry.
Great.
I know that it's not rational because I do know, at least now at this stage of life, I can understand, right? I can understand that I am qualified, but having that imposter syndrome is a holdover. It's a habit. It's muscle memory.
Yeah, I kind of felt that way when we were... kind of felt a little bit of that emanating when we met with Jeff Myers, in a way.
Right, and if you haven't yet, go back an episode.
Episode 11.
Correct. Go back an episode, our slightly extended play, 50-something minutes. It is a very powerful, special episode of our podcast. Also, some humor in it, because it is
us.
Exactly. But it's... it was quite an episode and quite an interview that we were able to do with our friend, Cantor Rabbi Jeff Myers. So that was just a plug
like
for a previous episode.
Cantor Rabbi first.
I have to do Cantor Rabbi first.
C becomes before R?
Because we knew him as a cantor. That's how we know him.
Right.
So, I mean, this is fodder for another episode, but why just because he became a rabbi later? Why does rabbi come
go first
before cantor, right?
That's
so,
right.
But yes, when we're around our colleagues and it's hard not to feel...
I mean, I look at some of our colleagues who've, like, sang for the Pope.
That's right. And when we go on our conventions and when we go on our professional conferences, we are surrounded by the very best of our profession.
Yes.
And sometimes the very worst of our profession.
Why are you looking at me with that one?
I was looking past you at the bartender.
Oh, I see. Because I'm raising my hand for another drink.
Yes.
And as soon as you said the worst of our...
And the bartender shaking his head, he can't believe you're ready for another drink already.
I sucked that down real fast.
It's hard not to feel a sense of intimidation and to feel like you're an imposter among your colleagues.
Matt, I have felt intimidated by you.
By me?
Yeah.
No.
It's true. When we first met...
When I used to have the late night shtick, right?
Yeah, I was very intimidated by you. You're like one of like the Gdolim.
I am...
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. You're on track to be president of our assembly.
Okay, so there is a perfect example. Imposter. It's the funniest looking president.
True story. Grow that beard back.
I guess that's a very good example of currently feeling imposter syndrome is that, you know, I have been an honored, but I've been chosen to be on a leadership track in the Canada Assembly.
He's the chosen one.
One of the chosen
few. One of the chosen.
And it's... it's like an awesome responsibility.
Well, you're the treasurer right now, and I'm a little worried.
So that trip to Barbados that I took.
That's right. Financial statements.
Nothing to see here.
No. You were davening, right?
In first class.
Yeah, first class. At the Ritz. It was work.
Listen,
you brought a book with God in it.
If they're going to give me the Cantor's Assembly credit card,
that's what we're paying for.
That's absolutely. We have really covered some good ground.
Another
today.
Round for my friend, my intimidator, Matt. No, wait, I'm the intimidatee.
You're the intimidatee.
I am.
Is this
news to you?
This is some fresh insight. But I think...
Maybe that'll be another podcast.
I think imposter syndrome is alive and well. I think that, just to wrap it up, to get some closure, to close the loop...
I hate that. I need closure. Will you unpack that idea? I hate that too. These colloquialisms.
Yeah,
we'll
have some synergy with that or something. Anyway.
I think moving forward,
I think that people who suffer from imposter syndrome will never stop. It changes, it transforms, it looks different and feels different, but it's something that's always with us, I think. And we learn to deal with it, I think, a little better as we gain age, experience, and perspective.
Well, you would know because you're older than me.
That is true.
When you were my age,
It was worse. I mean,
imagine being a woman.
I think it was as close to a linear graph as I can make it is that the newer and younger I was in my career, the more I had it. And every year that goes on is a better year professionally and more comfortable and more experienced.
How have I?
Yeah, I don't know. Do you feel that way too or not?
I don't
or
know.
It just kind of depends on the situation.
I don't know. I want to break past the the gender conditioning. That's really important to me to break past that.
That's a whole other ingredient into it. Yeah. Well, speaking of ingredients, we've been enjoying these old fashions. It has been a pleasure sitting here and having you listen and join us virtually.
Yes.
Please do join us in person next time. And I certainly promise you that if you walk into the bar with us, the drinks are on us.